out intro music. That'll do, intro music.
Did its job.
Give us time to pull our outline out of our folder. We share a folder. That's because we do everything for free here at Co-op. We can't be buying two folders. We got one folder. We get it alternate Mondays. It's orange because that's the color of the folder I was able to steal from my workplace from the supply cabinet. That's what we got. Orange is our color at work. So it's like they decided, yeah, orange is going to be our color, but then we use orange in places that we shouldn't use it, like our... we send video games out to people, and if a video game is damaged in some way, there's this special tape you can put on console disc video games that'll help it skip over the bad area, I guess.
Like the scratches.
Yeah, or little chips that you might get. And they were like, oh, well, just buy bright orange tape. And people are like, what's this neon orange tape? And it's like, how about when you're using it to cover mistakes, you go for a more low-key tape, like gray or clear.
No, they got to know whose tape it is.
Like, oh, but... All right, I don't want to give away the company that I work for, my office job. I care about co-ops so much more than my office job, in spite of the health benefits, the paycheck, the livelihood I get from it. And, of course, co-op pays me nothing. I still like going to co-op like a zillion times better than going to my job. You could ask me any day of the week. It's like, hey, do you want to host a 6 a.m. gardening show on co-op? You can have the day off of work. I'd be like, gardening, huh? Yes, I do. I would like that very much. This is Chasing Sound. You're listening to us streaming on the internet live right now, koop.org. Or you might be catching us on your fancy HD radio device on KVRX HD3. I think Hornsby is included in that.
That's right.
Hornsby, this little guy that has horns that somehow is involved with co-op. I don't know all the details. So tonight we've got an extra special episode. Tonight is the copycat episode, and I've been playing around with this idea in my head for months and months now. This isn't about plagiarism, though it would be very tempting to do an episode about that because I know a lot of straight lifting in music history. There's just a lot of that. And I'm not talking about sampling like in hip hop. It's one thing when Dr. Dre samples Funkadelic records, or you know, when Q-Tip goes and sample, or J Dilla goes and samples, you know, different party disco records. I respect that very much, but there's also other things like, you know, the Weezer "If You Want to Destroy My Sweater" song, which is basically the Pixies song "I Bleed," but with goofier lyrics.
Oh yeah, I don't.
But if you play them back to back, you're like, oh yeah, that's just the same song. So this isn't the plagiarisms episode. This is the copycat episode. And what I mean by copycat is this show, this episode, which will probably be the first part of several more because there's plenty of stuff I can do, but it's just to show a through line. I find that a lot of my friends don't connect the dots with groups. A group will come along and be super popular and seem to sort of fill this void of another group that was maybe popular a generation to two generations ago. And a lot of people, you know, there's only so many connoisseurs in the world. Most people, if they hear a song, they assume the person singing it wrote it. That they just don't, you know, they don't connect one band to another band, and they don't see how heavily influenced one band might be from another, or how one man might be a combination of several other bands sort of shuffled together. But that has fascinated me, and true audiophiles love listening to a group and finding reference points. Love it when a great group shows you the roadmap to how you connect them to other artists. And it's been happening forever. I mean, all you got to do is look at the British blues movement of the 60s and connect the dots to the stuff that led to that. Everything from, you know, the Chess record collection to Chuck Berry to all the great American blues and how they sort of juked it up and made it into something different. I love stuff like that. So tonight's the copycat episode of Chasing Sound, Mach 1. We're going to start off with a pair of songs, and I'm using a new interface tonight to play the music. So if something goes wrong, I want you to just hold on to your horses. I've got backups. I've got it backed up in several, you know, another backup player. I've got it backed up on my phone. So yeah, don't worry if things go wrong. Just bear with us, and I'll get you loaded on another thing. I like trying new things, new technology. So we're gonna give it a whirl tonight. I'm not gonna name any names because I don't, you know, this is a commercial-free zone. We're not here to pump up any interface or software. But we're gonna start with a pair of bands. One is LCD Sound System. You've probably heard of them. They're pretty big, and they came out in this sort of post September 11th. New wave of New York music. And this was when, towards the late 90s, early 2000s, when electronica had really found its day. It had almost completely taken over as far as being what the coolest music was happening. A new wave of underground hip hop was coming through, the Soulside, Quantum era, you know, DJ Shadow, Blackalicious, Jurassic 5, all the big DJs of the era were suddenly really selling some records and really making a name for themselves. And the electronic music and the rave culture had finally broke out from the underground and had made guitar-driven music seem very stupid and annoying. And it's like, and I know this because I was playing in a guitar group at the time, and most of my friends in my social circle didn't know that I played in a group. It was actually kind of embarrassing. The last thing you wanted to do would be like, hey, will you come see my band play? And your friends would be like, ugh. Like, nobody wanted to come see your band play. And then all of a sudden, just back to back, there were all these groups out of New York. There was a 3-song mini EP released by The Strokes. It blew up. It blew up in the UK first, weirdly enough. Then you had Interpol. They blow up. You had TV on the radio. All these groups suddenly were coming along. They all started the same pattern, an EP or like a maxi single that got incredible reviews, followed by a full-length album follow-up that got even better reviews. They were all over MTV. They were all over radio. And just like that, you had the next wave of guitar-driven music. LCD Sound System came a little bit later. They had some singles coming out in the early 2000s, but their first full-length didn't really drop till like maybe 2005. And they were better than all those bands. All those other bands, to me, Interpol, TV on the Radio, The Strokes, they all had one good EP, one good full-length album, and then it degraded. Each album thereafter, a little bit less interesting. LCD Sound System only got more interesting with every release. They released 3 full-length albums for about a period of 5 years. It was like 2005, 2007, and 2009. Those 3 albums, each one better than the last. And they were epic. And what struck me about them was the lack of understanding of my friends. Like, they didn't realize that LCD Sound System is a reimagined reawakening of the Talking Heads. Yeah. And it's crazy to me how few people connected those dots. And I'm like, we just had a beep in here. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
Let's just ignore that. If it's a fire, we'll smell something. So people, and I would bring it up and people are like, what, really? And what I realized was like, oh, I guess there's like a lot of people that don't know the Talking Heads that well. But the Talking Heads and LCD Sound System are woven together in the fabric of music history. They're these cooler than cool New York bands. Talking Heads come up out of CBGB. They're cutting their teeth in the same club that the Ramones, Patti Smith, all these other great bands, Television. They're all coming out of CBGB, like class of 1975, 76. And the way Talking Heads did it is they start as this sort of new wave-ish band flourishing in sort of a punk new wave environment. And they just build upon that. More about them in a minute. But basically, they started doing more and more interesting things. Like the song I'm going to play tonight is from the album Remain in Light, which is the breakout record. Had Burning Down the House, stuff like that. And they, at that point, they had stopped being this band that just wanted to be a four-piece and do what they could do live on a record. And they started just recording these grooves. And they took this massive pile of grooves and sort of sampled it and would take a little groove here and like, all right, let's just keep overdubbing and overdubbing on top of this groove until we have something really weird. And then we'll sort of base the song around this groove, but then we'll do all this multi-tracking. So by the time they went to tour Remain in Light, which came out in 1980, they realized we're not enough of a band to even pull this off. So they started incorporating session players. One of the guitar player that played with Zappa and King Crimson, extra percussionists. extra keys, and they just added three or four more players. And when Talking Heads made that leap to including those stellar session players, there was basically no touching them. They were, you know, arguably the best live band going at that time. Or you would have to almost get out of the rock and roll genre to find a band that could compete with them in that moment. You would almost have to dip into like Herbie Hancock's live band to find something more powerful with more musical prowess. And LCD Sound System sort of followed that same idea. They used the best analog gear. They kept their grooves simple, just these cutting bass lines. And they kept it in the pocket. They kept it simple, but then they would layer on top of layer of these incredible musical happenings that would turn a simple groove. I mean, both bands weren't afraid to stand on a single note for like 2 minutes. Yeah. Most people just aren't brave enough to try that. They don't realize humans respond to that in a certain way. We respond to melody. We respond to basic shuffles and basic grooves in an interesting way. We're not always out to be impressed. Sometimes we just want to feel something that just drives it home in a very, you know, almost caveman kind of way that speaks to us too, as well as musical prowess. So to me, these bands are forever intertwined. You almost need one to understand the other, and they both hold a place in musical history that is singular unto itself. I don't think there's any band that's ever really touched either one of these groups as far as what they could pull off live. And then the vocals, I mean, you cannot beat the lyrics, the imagery, and the delivery of those two singers, Murphy and of course, Talking Heads guy, because we're live. I can't remember. David Byrne. Course, why can I never remember whenever the microphone's on? But anyhow, we're going to kick it off with a pair of tracks from these two groups. We're going to play Home by LCD Sound System, and we're going to go right into Once in a Lifetime by the Talking Heads. And just pay attention, really close your eyes and let yourself dive into these tracks, and you'll see exactly what I mean. Home is a track that sort of gives you a glimpse into the future of LCD Sound System. By this time, they're recording their third album, and they're realizing this is a grind. This is not a very fun life. You basically, from the time you say, let's make a record, to the time you're done touring and promoting it, 3 or 4 years of your life gone. You got all these gray hairs you didn't notice before. You haven't seen your dog or your mom or your partner in years. Your relationships fall apart, or they become very blurry. It's a weird, nearly impossible way of life. And Home is sort of this song reckoning with the idea of like, man, I just want to go home. I just want to use my coffee pot. I want to pet my dog. I want to talk to my girlfriend or boyfriend. Like, I am so sick of this grind. And it's a beautiful jam. And it's got some meaning to it if you sort of dig past the surface. So let me load this up, man. I think we're about to get into some music here.
Let's do it.
Let's do this thing. Here we go. Home. Thank you.
I might find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself,
Co-op is hosting an official South by Southwest showcase this year. Join us on Saturday, March 16th at 7 p.m. at the Belmont for an eclectic, all-local lineup featuring 2019 Austin Band of the Year winner Shiny Ribs, Dream Pop Rockers, Moving Panoramas, Austin Music Hall of Famers 16 Deluxe, the Gary Clark Jr. produced hip-hop duo Blackalack, up-and-coming indie rockers Shy Beast, and legendary psych rockers Bubble Puppy. Priority entry for South by Southwest badge and wristband holders. The Belmont is located at 305 West 6th Street. More information at koop.org.
Support comes from the University Presbyterian Church, located at 2203 San Antonio Street, presenting the Uplift Jazz Concert on Friday, March 15th at 7:30 p.m., doors at 7. The evening features the jazz talents of saxophonist Zach Varner and singer Pamela Hart. Concert proceeds help the church to continue to provide basic services for less fortunate Austinites. Tickets and more info at upcaustin.org.
Saxophone.
Smooth.
Yeah, that was from the Sax on the Beach compilation. Came out sometime in the 80s. Thanks for listening to us. This is Chasing Sound. This is our copycat episode. You're streaming us live at koop.org or listening to us on your HD radio on the HD3 KVRX signal, or maybe a rebroadcast on the Radio Free America site, where you can always catch the last couple of episodes of your favorite shows. However you're doing it, you're into it, and so are we. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Just finished up a two-song block there with LCD Sound System, Home, off their This Is Happening album. What would have been their last album had they not caved and got back together. Did you listen to that album they made when they got back together?
I listened to like half of it. Yeah. Some of the singles.
Not so good. Wasn't too into it. Some people, I'm sure, liked it, though. To me, that those three albums they put out, the Sound Is Over, This Is Happening, and then I forget the other one. But yeah, that three that they put out sort of back-to-back, those are just, that is the most perfect backbone of a group I think I've ever come across without dipping into like the Beatles or the Stones or Zeppelin. Right after that, we had Once in a Lifetime from the Talking Heads, Remain in Light. Interesting to note that is their biggest selling and most popular Talking Heads album. It was a huge departure for the band, like I said earlier. The songs were built from pre-recorded grooves and samples, something that was still very new to the music scene. Samplers didn't really become readily available and user-friendly until much later into the 80s. The band just sort of took these pre-recorded grooves and built tracks around them, just adding layers and layers. And that gave way to the band's big new live era. If you've ever seen the documentary concert film Stop Making Sense, that's basically that idea, and that sort of visual drama was begun with the album Remain in Light. To this day, probably my favorite Talking Heads album as far as overall records go. I love a lot of their stuff, and they were, in a lot of ways, they were a singles band, but they did have a couple of records that were just start to finish fantastic, and Remain in Light is definitely one of them. Next thing we're going to get into is the relationship between the Austin, Texas band Spoon and the band The Kinks. If you were a longtime Spoon fan, or even if you weren't, I'll tell you a story that you might not know. So there was that moment in the late 90s where Spoon had been picked up by Elektra Records and then dropped almost 4 months or so afterwards. And the record was immediately in print and then out of print. It was a very bizarre situation. And Spoon, the band, sort of dug in and started making new music without a record label, not knowing if they would ever have a label to release it. And it was a big thing. But in between then and when they finally got signed to Merge Records, it was terrible because they had spoiled their relationship with Matador Records by leaving to go to Elektra. So they were sort of a band without a home for a while there, back to working day jobs. Very sad for what, considering that a lot of people in Austin were like, this is the best band ever, and you just couldn't believe their bad luck. But they dug in and started writing a new style and a new sound, and you would hear it when they would play live shows, or when Britt Daniel, the singer, was doing these solo shows just under his own name. He would throw in a couple songs from the stuff that was going to be released, and you'd be like, wow, that sounds so different. And, they had a couple of singles come out that were very different than what they had done before. Way less distorted guitar, way more intricate pop melodies. And I remember reading in an interview that Britt Daniel had gotten his hands on like a Kinks box set. And it just made such perfect sense to me that these songs that ultimately would go on to make up the album Girls Can Tell were so fueled by, two things, the Kinks and the John Lennon album Plastic, the Plastic Ono Band. It seemed to me like he was a guy who found the Kinks and found that first John Lennon solo album and just dove into it and just embraced the influence. So I'm going to play you a pair of songs now. And to me, like the one I'm about to play you probably couldn't exist without the kind of stuff that the Kinks was putting out. The Kinks never were a huge seller. They kind of sold just enough records to stay afloat. They didn't sell as much as their peers, that's for sure. But they were tremendously important, and the songwriting is unbelievable. Ray Davies is just one of the greatest songwriters. He's like a, I don't even know how he's almost like a Hank Williams in that he just has this endless list of killer songs that are unlike anybody else. And as far as, you know, the songwriting Bible, he definitely has a huge important chapter. So the track I'm going to play from Spoon is called The Fitted Shirt. It's off the album Girls Can Tell, which was released in 2001 on Merge Records. And to me, The Fitted Shirt by Spoon showcases Kinks' influence better than any band ever has. It's like really wearing your heart and your influence on your sleeve, saying, yeah, hey, we're listening to the Kinks a lot. Here's our take on that. And then right after that, I'm going to play Situation Vacant, which came from the 1967 Kinks album Something Else by the Kinks. And I actually remember seeing Spoon a couple of times where they played this song. I've never heard a recording of it. I've only ever heard them do it live a couple of times. One time I was down in Houston visiting some family, and I saw that they were playing, and I wanted to get away from my family, so I went to the show. And they played it there in this dingy Houston club, and I think I heard them play it one other time, and then never again. So if you have a recording of Spoon playing that Kinks song, you're a lucky person, because I've never found one, and boy, I look for things. So here we go. This is The Fitted Shirt, and it's going to be followed directly by Situation Vacant by the Kinks.
Yeah. Would like to thank the following businesses that have joined as members during the drive.
Breakaway Records, all vinyl record store, 211 West North Loop, breakawayrex.com.
LOC Structural Engineering, Terry at locstructural.com.
Friends of Riverside ATX, riversidefriends.com.
Barley and Pfeiffer Architecture, barleypfeiffer.com.
Lori Jo Hansel, attorney.
Cornucopia Popcorn, cornucopiapopcorn.com.
Mary Garwood Yancey, PhD, licensed psychologist, 512-452-2929.
Slab Barbecue and Beer, dopebbq.com.
Support comes from South by Southwest Outdoor Stage Concerts, which are back on site at Lady Bird Lake March 14th through 16th. Performances by ex-ambassadors Patty Griffin, Andrew Bird, and more. Open to the public with a South by Southwest guest pass. More info at guestpass.sxsw.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking around through the underwriting messages. We appreciate your loyalty to this program. This is Chasing Sound, and tonight is our copycat episode night. So what about your show, man? What story do you got coming up this week, or have you even picked one?
I can't remember the name, but it's by Elizabeth Baer.
Yeah?
Do you remember? It came out in 2007.
Do you remember what it's about?
It's about a robot walking around a desolate wasteland.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Probably wondering, what's it all for?
Yeah.
What's a robot?
Walking down the beach just like,
why do we even do this? Robots. I was just reading a thing online about it was a discovery of like the first science fiction story from like, you know, something crazy like 44 AD or something. It talks about traveling to the moon, encountering aliens and all kinds of weird stuff. You should do one of those if it's,
yeah,
you know.
I did. I was thinking of doing the Voltaire story that people say is the first sci-fi.
How old is that one?
It's like 1630 or something like that.
Nice. That's old. Not quite as old as like 44 AD. I read one of those early Roman novels. It was sort of a, I wouldn't say coming of age. It was like a traveler story, but with some pretty heavy like perversion stuff in there. Not the best read I've ever had. I really feel like the novel as an art form got fleshed out later.
Yeah, it's more like an 1800s.
Yeah, thing. It's impressive though that just, I don't know. I guess it's just impressive to see the first version of anything.
Yeah,
even if it's not that great. So tonight is the copycat episode, showing bands that probably wouldn't exist without bands that came before them and sort of created a lane that some of your favorite bands might have used to get to where they're at. So this will be the last dose of tonight's show. We're winding it down. We got about 15 minutes left or so. We before the break, by the way, we had Situation Vacant by the Kinks off their 1967 masterpiece Something Else by the Kinks. Before that, we had The Fitted Shirt by Spoon off 2001's Girls Can Tell. Now we're going to get into the band Interpol and the band Joy Division. So to me, Interpol, you take two things. You take Joy Division and you take Fugazi Dynamics. You take the mood of Joy Division and the sort of the just presentation, and then you shuffle it with the dynamics of the band Fugazi, and you got yourself some Interpol.
Yes.
So to prove that theory, I'm going to play you a handful of tracks here. We're going to have the track Obstacle One off Joy, not Joy Division. Here I am confusing these bands, off Interpol's first full length album, Turn on the Bright Lights. An exceptional album, definitely the best thing that band ever put out for my taste anyway. After that, we're going to play a track from Joy Division's album Closer, which came out 2 months after their lead singer, Ian Curtis, took his own life. It's a track called A Means to an End, which you listen to the vocal delivery, the bass line, you're going to hear Interpol in it, I promise you. And then just to prove that all you need to add to Joy Division recipe-wise is Fugazi to get Interpol, I'm going to play you a Fugazi song, just a random one. And that's pretty much going to sum up our night. So here we go. This is Obstacle One from Turn on the Bright Lights from the band Interpol. We'll be right back. Joy Division. How come they haven't put out a record lately?
Where'd they go, man?
Just kidding. That's too soon. Yeah, this is it. We're wrapping up our copycat night. I noticed one listener just jumped on because this is a streaming show and we can actually count our listeners and have our hearts broken when you stop listening. But somebody just jumped online. I'll try to sum it up quickly. Copycat episode. It's about bands who are obviously influenced by other bands and don't try to hide it. Tonight we've showcased LCD Sound System and the Talking Heads and how they are bound together. The band Spoon and the band The Kinks and how they're woven together in some way that I don't have time to re-describe to you. And we're finishing it off with Interpol, who we believe is just a shuffling of Joy Division and Fugazi dynamics. Joy Division mood and vocal delivery and Fugazi changes, basically giving Joy Division a little bit more of a zesty bit of dynamics. So yeah, we just heard Interpol Obstacle One from their debut full-length album Turn on the Bright Lights. Right after that we had Joy Division, A Means to an End, from their final album released 2 months after their singer took his own life. That album was called Closer. A great record, by the way. They only put out two proper full-lengths before the singer died, but they're both incredible and both sound contemporary to this day. Of course, those were released on the infamous Factory Records, the record label that hemorrhaged money until finally going bankrupt, which is a whole other... I actually did a whole episode about Manchester Sound and Factory Records, and I could do 100 episodes on that company. I just love how little they seem to care about money. We're going to finish it off with Fugazi. And yeah, if you want to know what Interpol is, you throw Joy Division and Fugazi into a mason jar and shake it up, and you've got yourself Interpol. So this is Latin Roots from Fugazi's album Steady Diet of Nothing, one of my all-time favorite jams. We thank you for listening to Chasing Sound. We thank you for streaming us live at koop.org or on KVRX HD3 on your HD radio. Have a good night. Yeah, Don't forget to listen to The Stopped Clock Friday nights at 8 o'clock. It is killer. It is killer. Probably my new favorite co-op show. Check it out, and we'll see you next week.